distinguished delegates and friends. I got the privilege of summing up this debate, which took place for nearly for the last 2.5 hours, or perhaps more. And a resolution which was moved by the Chief Minister of Arunachal, a young person and a very important person, because he comes from one of our most important frontier states. He placed the resolution very neatly and touched the important aspects of the resolution. And therefore, I was very pleased that this resolution was discussed in such a simple manner. The resolution as it is a very comprehensive resolution which touches practically all the aspects of foreign policy, all the projections of foreign policy in areas in terms of territory and in areas of problems and ideas. Therefore, if you see the structure of the resolution itself, it's very interesting. You will be glad to see that it begins with taking in one general sweep the general positive gain and some of the problems which are negative in nature have been indicated in the first paragraph at the very outset itself. And then we have moved to some other problems and aspects and areas. I think this is true for all the countries, big or small, developed or undeveloped, advanced or non-advanced, that the foreign policy of that country, how is it vis-à-vis its own neighbors, has a great importance and great significance. And naturally, therefore, when we consider the problems of foreign policy of India, the relations of India with its neighbors becomes more important. And as you know, I don't think there is any country in the world who has no problems with its own neighbors. We started with problems because India took birth in the process of partition, and that process itself created many problems. But we have not only survived those problems, but we have tried to solve some of these problems. I mean, this is really speaking a positive point of problems created with Pakistan, the Bangladesh, emergence of Bangladesh. Naturally, there were certain problems with some other countries, but I can tell you, and tell you with little sense of satisfaction and appreciation, that in the last few years, at least we can claim that with one of our neighbors, at the present moment, there are absolutely no outstanding problems at all. When I'm saying this in case of Sri Lanka. It is a moderate type of relationship. We had problems. Lack of problems is no asset. Problems were there, but those problems were accepted as a challenge. And both our Prime Minister and Prime Minister of Lanka took initiative. And whatever the problems between Sri Lanka and India were solved. Therefore, at the present moment, I can say that with Sri Lanka, we have no outstanding problems. I wish we work in such a manner in months and years to come, so that we shall be able to say that we have no problems with any one of our neighbors. And that process has already begun. This is what the resolution goes on to say. Parking with Pakistan, the package of measures that was accepted in the last 2 months, there was practically absolutely no relation with Pakistan for the last 11, 12 years. After the 1965 conflict with Pakistan, there was no diplomatic relations. There was no connection whatsoever, no linkage whatsoever. There was no postal linkage, there was no road link, there was no rail link, there was no air link. And as a matter of fact, there are thousands of families in India who have got their members living on the other side of the frontier, and thousands of families in Pakistan who have got their members on this side of the frontier. But people couldn't go. The people have their own places of high pilgrimages, for example. We have got certain important places of pilgrimage for Sikh, for example, in Pakistan. And for Pakistan, there are a number of them on the Indian side. So we took series of these steps, and now we have established the diplomatic relations. We have established all these important links, which are very essential for any country to have a relationship. Air link, rail link, postal link, road link, all links have been re-established. And we can say that now we have been poised for a further development of relations so that they can become completely normal. Well, it is sometimes disappointing that on the other side, still the mention of Kashmir problem is made in an adverse manner. But I think our position we have made is absolutely clear. So I need repeat it again here. As far as that problem is concerned, our position is very clear. Jammu and Kashmir is part of India. And there is, really speaking, no question that remains to be solved as far as we are concerned. Except perhaps the occupied Kashmir problem. But the same thing I can say that the most important change in the last year is the relationship that has been established with China. Upgradation of the representation of India and China both is certainly a significant step. A single step, a simple step, but very significant step, I should say. And we propose to work on the same lines, hoping with confidence that normalization will be further strengthened. Naturally, the normalization of relationship between two countries depends upon the mutuality of the interests, the desire on both the sides, and it is only if the things can move. We propose to make an effort in this direction. As some of the members mentioned, except for Bangladesh, and there's a resolution itself mentioned, that Bangladesh has unfortunately taken the position of confrontation. Though we are interested in solving all the problems bilaterally. According to us, according to our action, and according to our philosophy, according to our policy, if there is an approach of friendship, there is no problem between any two countries that cannot be solved. And particularly in Bangladesh and India, there is absolutely no basic problem between us If there are any problems, we certainly would be interested to solve them bilaterally. As a matter of fact, as a neighbor, we are interested in their prosperity, in their stability. But whatever problem they have got in the interior, they sometimes try to project them on the international relations, and particularly their relations with us, and create a problem. They have unfortunately made the sharing of water of Ganges a debating problem, a problem of dispute, and at the present moment they have raised it in the U.S. We hope that they see the wisdom in the approach of friendliness and bilateral discussions and try to find a solution bilaterally. So this is the one major aspect of the resolution, that it deals with the problems with the neighboring countries that took place, to which many members made a reference, and that was the non-aligned conference that was held in Colombo. The significance of this conference can be explained in many ways. First of all, this was a conference held for the first time in Asia. As a matter of fact, Asia has taken a pioneering lead in the matter of movement of non-aligned, but it so happened that the summit meeting of non-aligned never took place till this year in Asia, and therefore the significance of Colombo conference. But I'm very glad to tell you that this conference, though there were attitudes which were developing, which created a sort of a sense of doubt in the mind whether there will be some difficulty about the success of the conference, because some of the countries which are adversely interested in the non-aligned movement were creating positions and conditions which possibly indicated towards that. But when we met there, I think the thought of non-alignment is so healthy that when in that capacity all the nations and all the leaders met and came together, all the doubts and problems evaporated, and ultimately the conference became a great success. This conference represented largest number of nations in the world, and I would say the majority of population in the world. Somebody has, I think Sardar Karan Singh particularly, made a point of explaining why the significance of non-alignment to the developing countries, how it is a positive thought and not a negative thought, how non-aligned thought is going to help countries to maintain their independence, both political and economic, but at the same time it is going to give them a new strength for further development in the economic and technological field as well. The most important idea that emerged at Colombo was the idea of collective self-reliance. There is also this other part of the resolution which is at the end of the resolution. But at the present moment we find in the international relations this economic cooperation is becoming more and more important, because basically the economic problems of all the developing countries are the major problems. Even when we consider our economic problems in our country, we come across the international background of those problems. And when we try to sit in the international forums and conferences, we come across the national content of economic problems there also. So these are complementary situations. Here, at the present moment, as you know, there is a dialogue and discussion and debate that is going on between the developed countries and developing countries. The problems of developing countries have the problems of getting skilled resources. They have got the problems of getting technology, right type of technology. They have got the problems of indebtedness. They have got many economic problems. They have got the problems of getting the proper share in the trade, for example. As we have seen the last 25, 30 years after the Second World War, the manner in which the world trade has expanded is nobody's business. I don't think in history of mankind ever the trade has been so sharply increased in such a short period ever before. It has happened, this certainly phenomena has taken place. But this phenomena in whose favor? Trade has expanded. But practically, the major share of this trade and its profits go to the developed countries. And those who are strong, they become stronger. Those who are weak, they still become weaker. Therefore, one of the problems today in the economic field is to get a proper share in the trade, for example. So, whatever happens to this debate and dialogue and discussion between the developed countries and developing countries, non-aligned conference emphasized one very important aspect, that let developed countries take their own stand and let us try to discuss with them. But in order to keep our unity, it is very essential that the developing countries try to cooperate among themselves first. And if they do that, there will be a strong sense of collective self-reliance. As we say in the economic policy field, self-reliance is the final objective, fundamental objective of our policy. So in the case of all the developing countries, there is a necessity of persuading them to accept this principle of self-reliance. Till we reach the self-reliance stage, naturally, we have to depend upon each other because ultimately, the international interdependence also is a reality. And this international interdependence is much more reality in the non-aligned world. And therefore, it was decided that there are many areas in which developing countries can help each other. In matters of trade, in matters of technology, India, for example, has made a constructive contribution in this sort of cooperation. For example, the developing countries in Africa. Whatever we have learned in the last nearly 30 years of planning, I mean, we are in a position today, thanks to Pandit Jawaharlal's perception, that we can tell them that here is a model of development. How to develop agriculture, how to develop small-scale industry, how to use the manpower, what is the right type of technology that is useful for them. An undeveloped country, which is just trying to take its first step towards development, if they just go to a very highly developed country with their high technology, like USA for example, whatever is available there is certainly not going to be useful to them, first of all. And secondly, if at all they want to get it, it will have to pay very heavy cost. So this is the background when I am talking about the collective self-reliance among the non-aligned countries. The idea was that the developing countries amongst ourselves we have got lots of resources, lots of developed technology, and we have a desire to help each other, because when a developing country gives help or cooperation to a developing country, it will not be the motivation of an imperialist country or any other big power. It will be an approach of a brother helping a brother. So the non-alignment conference, I'm talking about the Colombo conference, they accepted these one basic principles of collective self-reliance, and they have made an appeal for the cooperation for developing countries among themselves. The same is true in case of Southeast Asia. Apart from neighborhood, the other two more important areas for India is concerned is Southeast Asia on one side and West Asia on the other. This is the part of the world in which we live. The political environment and its political ecology is to be taken into account. If I can make use of that word, political ecology, we'll have to see that we create the right type of political atmosphere in this region, which are so near to our own region, the Southeast Asia and the West Asia. In the Southeast Asia, some important events have taken place, and we'll have to take note of it. In the last year and a half, we have seen the emergence of three socialist states: Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. This emergence of these states is certainly a triumph of progressive nationalism. One should not try to create a feeling of ideological distance between them and their other neighbors. I think they are interested in developing their own economies, and therefore we are interested to see that these countries and other ASEAN countries, whatever their internal problems, whatever the history behind it, whether we can help to create a condition so that they cooperate with each other. We found that all these countries, Cambodia, Vietnam, have accepted non-alignment as their principle, and they participated in that conference and made a contribution in that conference. So we'll have to see that this atmosphere of cooperation and the idea of cooperation takes root in that area, so that there will be a prosperity and peace in that region. Unfortunately, one can't say the same thing in case of West Asia, because there the root cause of the trouble is still unsolved. The point is mentioned in the resolution. I need not repeat the whole thing again. The question of some of the unauthorized occupied area by Israel and the Palestinian national rights are concerned. Unless some major steps are taken, and they will have to be taken by the countries concerned, particularly Israel will have to take some initiative in this matter. We have been with the Arabs, we have been supporting this cause of Arabs from the very beginning to very consistently. But this question has not yet in any way a near solution. In addition to the problems, the Lebanon civil war has added to the complexity of the problem further. If at all these problems in the West Asia are to be solved, we will have to see that the unity among the Arabs is maintained, and the justice of the Palestinian cause is made acceptable to the general world opinion, which really speaking has accepted it is a problem that they should try to translate that acceptance into some sort of an action. The other important area that is considered in the resolution is what's happening in the Africa. Only during the last few months, our Prime Minister paid a very significant and important visit to some of the South African countries, Tanzania, Zambia, Mauritius. And I must say, the timing of the visit was so significant that the problem of the national liberation and the unity of the liberation forces had become very important. And it was at this time that our Prime Minister's visit took place. And I am sure the Prime Minister's visit has made a contribution to strengthen the forces of national liberation and create a consciousness against the forces of racism and apartheid and the forces of those who are trying to control the people under colonial domination. South Africa has a very special place for India. When we think of South Africa, naturally we think of Mahatma Gandhi. And it was mentioned to Prime Minister by some of the leaders in Africa, and it was mentioned to me also by many African leaders when we meet them, that when we talk about Gandhiji and Pandit Nehru, they say that you have certainly, they are not your leaders. They are not only your leaders. They are our leaders as well. Because the contribution that Mahatma Gandhi and Pandit Jawaharlalji has made to the basic problems of the liberation movement are very decisive. And therefore, when we think about South Africa, naturally the name of Mahatma Gandhi comes to our mind. Because it was in South Africa that Mahatma Gandhi developed that unique method of satyagraha, which proved to be the most potent weapon in the hands of Indian masses to win the independence. And it is in that sense one can say that Mahatma Gandhi was South Africa's gift to India. South Africa's problems are so near our heart. Not only because our Indian population, people of Indian origin still live there, and still they are treated with discrimination, but because of this historical connection with the struggle of freedom in South Africa, I think we get much more emotionally, morally, and materially involved in this problem. At the present moment, it seems that the whole thing is taking a rather forward movement, but one will have to still wait and see what happens in the Geneva conference. But ultimately, conference succeeds or not is a different matter, but ultimately the freedom struggle must depend upon the struggle, our capacity of struggle of the people themselves and the unity of their own. And therefore, we have supported the cause of freedom in South Africa and wish that Zimbabwe, that is the name of Rhodesia, Namibia, they become free from this colonial domination soon, and the South African question also becomes an issue which can be easily solved in the years to come. In the case of There is another point which has been mentioned here, and I think I should certainly make a mention about it, that our relations with the socialist countries are good, and we consider this to be a very important facet of our foreign policy. Our Prime Minister's visit to USSR and GDR have been very important from this point of view, and we'll have to very specifically have a visit from the President of Bulgaria. I think these are very important things, and we must take a note of some of these important facets of our foreign policy. Friends, I have just tried to make a mention about some of the important issues that have been dealt with in the resolution. But the most important aspect is really speaking dealt at the end of the resolution, and that is the economic new order, the problem of economic new order. As you know, UN has held special session, and UN itself has accepted that new economic order has to be brought about. And this can be brought about only on the basis of cooperation amongst all the nations of the world. Small, big, developed, undeveloped, developing, socialist, non-socialist. I mean, all these countries will have to be brought together. But we still find there is some sort of reluctance amongst the developed countries. And it is very natural, I think. Natural for them, not natural for us. Because they don't want to lose their domination over the world. If they really speaking accept this idea of new economic order, they will have to change the character of their own economy. They will have to change the character of their own political concepts. Therefore, there is some sort of hesitation in their mind whenever these problems are concerned. The problems are discussed at many conferences. In the UNCTAD conference, in the Paris conference, sometimes in the UN itself, ideas are put forward, but still there is no response. The French president took initiative to call this Paris conference, and it was expected that possibly as one of the developed countries has taken initiative, it possibly would mean business. Of course it is doing some business, but business has not reaching a stage where it can be said that it is anywhere near solution. At the present moment, some discussions are going on, and let us hope that the developed countries come forward enthusiastically to give cooperation to the developing countries. The problem of balance of payment is there. The problem of trade, which I made a mention about it a little while ago, it is there. The problem of rising prices, particularly inflation. The developed countries, if they have got inflation, they certainly can get it compensated by many other ways. They get oil, which is costly, but they sell their war weapons also very costly to them. All the investments are made in their own countries. So the question of inflation also is very important question. So these, the question of indebtedness, for example, this is one of the most major issues. India certainly has received loans. India has certainly received credit facilities. But ultimately, India's main contribution for its own development is its own effort. You know, with all these aids and credits that are made available to us, I am roughly speaking, that nearly 93% of the total resources for the development that we invested in this country have come from within the country, only about 6 to 7% is in the form of some aid or grant or credit from other countries. But even then, the question of repayment of these debts is a very major issue. Sometimes they are on very hard terms. And most of the earning that the countries, developing countries make, have to invest is only in repayment. So this question of indebtedness is one of the very trickiest and very complex problems before the international community to solve. And I hope, therefore, we have made a mention here that USA and other Western European countries, though I must say that some of the West European countries, we must recognize this fact that some of them have been very liberal in offering these aid and credits, particularly credits they give on very softer terms, and they give it in a ready manner. That is what is more important, without any much of political strain. But even then, we must say that some of the leading West European countries has to take a positive lead in this matter and respond to the demands of the developing countries. If they do that, possibly what we are talking about, the interdependence and international cooperation, will become somewhat reality. So we have made an appeal in this resolution to those countries that they should think constructively about those problems and come forward with a hand of cooperation, to which India will certainly, and other developing countries, will respond deeply. Friends, I have tried to give you a sort of a summary of the resolution or explanation of the resolution in different forms. It touches the most important facets of foreign policy of India, and I would say this foreign policy of India is bearing its fruit. India has been accepted as one of the forward-looking countries amongst the developing countries, and I think we should certainly try to keep this forward-looking projections of our foreign policy, which have been given to us by our leadership, if we keep these things going on. But let us not forget one thing. All our foreign policy projections will be then successful, provided the real basis of any foreign policy projection is the national policy itself. What we do economically internally, how we do politically internally, is a guarantee of your foreign policy success abroad. If politically you are stable, if economically you are stable, and which we have proved in the last couple of years under the leadership of Srimati Indira Gandhi, during the days of emergency, and even before that, that we took certainly some hard decisions. And India is possibly the only country which had shown the way how it can be, how the problem of inflation can be handled. So let us not please forget the very close relationship between the internal policies of the country and the international policies. Really speaking, one is the projection of the other. Therefore, if at all we have to make our policy acceptable and amenable to the other people, I think we'll have to work harder, work with unity in the policy matters of our internal problems. Friends, I do not want to take more of your time. I am very glad that you gave me a very patient hearing.